Welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast. Each week on the show, we watch a different horror movie and talk all about it. And this month, we are doing Creepy Doll Month. Welcome to November, Nothing to Fear listeners. It is I, Billy Schultz, your host. And as always, I'm joined by Alex Wan and Luke Mason. Luke, it was your pick for the movie today. So why don't you check in and tell me how you're doing first?
Doing pretty good. I don't know. It's good. It's a nice day.
Yeah. It's good. It's very early.
I'm always just tired. I'm always tired when these start.
I know. This is like your coffee on Sunday morning. You like we warm you up and then you can go off to the rest of your day, you know, firing on some cylinders.
Yeah. And firing on all cylinder.
Yes, exactly. Well, we're glad to have you as always. I'm sure the people are looking forward to whatever big, giant, long, esoteric word you're going to use in today's episode. I'm sure people...
Okay, word. So, Alex, words are the things that we say.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And Alex, you're also here a little bit later in the day for you in Alberta, but how are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I was violently awakened this morning, as I am every morning, but this time I have an audio recording of what woke me up, so
My gosh.
If you'll indulge me, I'll play it into the mic and hopefully it gets picked up.
Okay. Good. Yes, this is good.
What is that?
Sounds like it's just a smash. Some smashing.
Is that your cat?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Running into the door?
Yeah, what is he doing?
I have a... Oh, it gets louder too, but...
Okay.
Yeah. You get it. It just repeats itself.
That's but yeah, terrifying.
Yeah, I have a little scratch pad for him on the door. And he enjoys banging on it very loudly every single morning. But I decided this morning to actually record it. To, you know, show other people my pain. But yes, I go through that every morning. And I wouldn't say it's like the sound of it that what irks me. It's more so the timing of it. It happens several hours before my alarm goes off. And my alarm goes off pretty early. So,
okay.
It's like a pre-alarm. But yeah, I'm okay. Other than that, I'm okay.
Okay. I have just a general curiosity question about that. Is why not have Maroki be allowed in your room when you're sleeping?
Because he's an asshole.
Okay.
And I'd rather be violently awoken to a sound of a banging door than to be violently awoken to the feel of a paw smacking your face.
I gotcha. Right. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how does he physically make that noise? Because, like, does he,
why don't you just tie him up? Watch enough movies to know how to do it.
That's true.
Yeah, you could just tie him up.
I mean, it's like a scratch pad that hangs on the door. And it,
oh,
like,
I see.
It's like you just hang it on the doorknob and then it just bangs on it. Like,
oh, okay. So the pad moves back and forth a little
bit. Yes. But the reason I have the pad is because if I did not have the pad, I don't think I would have a door anymore because he would actually scratch it off.
It would scratch through the door.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd like to retain some value to this condo.
Sure.
It's like, hello, this is the master bedroom. It used to have a door. You can install one yourself later.
Right.
Yeah.
I won't ever accuse myself of being an expert, but I have seen enough horror movies now to ask the question of, are you sure Maroki's not a demon? Like, that sounds like real demonic shit.
I mean, on the chance that he is a demon, that's why the door's closed.
Oh, there you go.
There's another reason, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. That was delightful. I'll make sure to boost it as much as I can if it doesn't come across, because it's truly a terrifying noise, especially if you're not used to it. As for myself, I am doing well today. It's already past noon. I've had a bit of a busy morning, as I usually do, but I'm coming off of a pretty good weekend. It was a fun weekend, a lot of good stuff. Something I'm specifically going to say for my something to cheer for the end of the episode, so listeners, stay tuned. But I have watched three scary movies in the last 3 days, and
that's too many.
That's too many. It's a lot.
It's almost as if you enjoy them now, huh?
I think I do enjoy them. Yeah. I mean, obviously the movie we watched for this week, but then as we record this, this is just before Hell House LLC comes out. So I rewatched that and Kelly watched it for the first time last night. But the movie that I rented on YouTube last time wasn't there. So we had to rent the director's cut, which is like 10 minutes longer and has more like story behind it.
Oh.
And actually makes that movie answer some of the questions that I had in that episode as to, like, why was Alex doing what he was doing? And, you know, because demons, turns out.
Okay. Cool.
So, yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Hell House LLC. Go back and listen to last month's episode for that. Because, as I alluded to, it is November. It's a new month, and that means a new theme. And I gave Luke a very difficult job of picking first this month with our creepy doll month, and the pickings were slim. So, Luke, what did you pick for us to watch this week?
Well, as far as I can tell, we have four creepy doll movies left. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get to do all of them this month, I'm sure.
Great.
Three of them are Annabelle's.
Yes.
So I picked the first Annabelle because
you did.
I had that as an option.
Yes.
And for continuity's sake, right?
Yeah.
For the sake of the month theme.
Right.
That. Well, and yeah, so if you listened last week, or if you are currently binge listening all the episodes in a row, you will have just heard Luke say that the first Annabelle had a rating of 28% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the second one had a significantly higher one. Mm-hmm. So you left it up to us to pick this week. We went with the first one. So what did you know about Annabelle before we watched it? Aside from the Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Just that it was in The Conjuring and that she's a possessed doll that haunts families and was creepy, had a dark face, mm-hmm. from, I guess, the evil side of the supernatural spectrum.
Right, right.
So very little. I knew almost nothing about the ins and outs of the Annabelle lore. So take one.
Hmm. Yeah, a good one to start with, I think. Let us know all about it. And of course, you know, we've now done some of the Conjuring franchise. We've done the three Conjuring titled films with Ed and Lorraine, and that Annabelle doll has been hanging around in all those films. So we got to see how she entered the canon, not necessarily her origin story, because I think that's in one of the later sequels or prequels or whatever. But I just knew that this was tangentially related to the Conjuring universe, the CCU, as we could call it. And it was one of those ones that I was surprised we hadn't done yet. You know, it's like it's become famous or known in the horror genre. And, you know, we finally got to it. So I didn't know anything about the plot aside from the one bit of trivia that, like, you know, well, actually, the real Annabelle doll is a Raggedy Ann doll and not like a Victorian doll in a dress. And that's the one piece of trivia that always comes up, is that, like, because Annabelle the doll is a real thing that the Warrens have in their, you know, museum of horrors, but it's just a Raggedy Ann doll. It's not like that doll with the painted face and the porcelain head and big body. It's just a Raggedy Ann doll, which I don't know, kind of makes it a bit scarier if this is truly a possessed artifact. But I don't know, Annabelle was really creepy. I want to talk about it after the trailer and after Alex does a synopsis. But Alex, what did you know about Annabelle before we go in?
You know, as much as myself could know about it, I knew it was about the doll that we have seen in The Conjuring. And yeah, like, because if I remember correctly, in the very first Conjuring movie, it opens up with, like, the first 5 minutes are about Annabelle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the whole the nurses with Annabelle.
Yeah, and it introduces, that's how they introduce Ed and Lorraine. So, you know, it was like possessed doll. How it got possessed, what it possesses, those were the questions that I wanted answered in this one. And
okay,
I guess it kind of answered them. But yeah, like, you know the basics. It's in the Conjuring universe, haunted doll, probably does some weird shit. And yeah, that's what I knew about it. I will say, if there's ever, like, a child or toddler that, or like even a baby that I find is particularly devil possessed. In my mind, mm-hmm. I call that child Annabelle.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, what an Annabelle, you know?
Sure.
I would never say it to the parents' face, but you know.
No.
That's kind of the adjective I would use to describe said child. Yeah, that's what I know about Annabelle.
Okay. Well, I, for one, am excited to talk to you two about it because I always do look forward to our conversations. So we will get into the trailer and into the synopsis relatively quickly here. I will say, spoilers for the movie Annabelle coming up. And also check out doesthedogdie.com for any triggering parts that we might discuss. But I also took some notes during that could serve as potential trigger warnings. So I'll list them off here. These are the ones I caught. But check out doesthedogdie.com if you want to just make double check. So the trigger warnings that I noticed in this movie were trauma around pregnancy, suicide, self-harm, and then harm to a child. And implied harm to a child, as well as just dolls, like so many dolls in this movie. So take those with whatever grains of salt you need to get through the episode, and we'll be back in just a moment.
John, wake up.
What?
Next door, I heard a scream.
Stay here, I'll go check it out.
John? Is everything all right?
Oh my God, you're covered in blood.
Go back inside, it's not mine, it's not. Go back inside, call an ambulance right now. Go!
You survived. You don't come out the other side of something like this weaker. What is there left to be scared of?
This is the last of them.
How did that get in there? I swear I threw it out.
Things must have got mixed up.
There, she fits right in.
Is a ghost.
Sometimes demons can attach themselves to objects.
What do I do? Protect your family.
Annabelle is a 2014 American supernatural horror film directed by John R. Leonetti, written by Gary Doberman, and produced by Peter Safran and James Wan. It is a prequel to the 2013 film The Conjuring and the second installment in the Conjuring Universe franchise. The film was inspired by a story of a doll named Annabelle told by Ed and Lorraine Warren. The film stars Annabelle Wallace, Ward Horton, and Alfred Woodard.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. So, Luke, how do you feel about this film that you picked for us? Give us your first thoughts.
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with this movie. It's slick. It goes down smooth. There's some scary parts. I liked the kind of design, I guess, of the demon. I thought it was really creepy. But I don't even think I didn't like this movie. I think I didn't even notice this movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
This is one of the films, it's been a while, where I caught myself on my phone more than watching the film. And so I guess I think it's kind of boring. And it's been a while since that happened. So we record on Sundays. I watched this Friday night, and I already don't really remember much of the plot of this movie, so hopefully you two can remind me what happens in this movie. Because it's just, I don't know, like, I guess I'd say it's a little uninspired. Mm. Every horror beat we've seen dozens of times now. I think a lot of the exposition plot gets really undercooked. There's so much hype around this cult that is like, okay, we don't really learn anything much about it in the end. Again, I have to tell you, asterisk, as far as I remember, maybe the two of you will remember much more about this movie because, again, I was on my phone. So I didn't think it was... I don't know what it's added to the lore. I enjoyed the one reference to the Warrens, and... like all of these movies, if I really start to dig into what's going on, it's always just, yeah, but how? And then it's because demons. And I know I've circled that drain a few times, so I'm going to do my best to have some self-control and not go round and round again in this episode. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like to shit on movies, and it's not even that I didn't like this movie, but it really, I would say it just didn't make an impact on me. And that's okay. Evidenced by the fact that I didn't really watch it.
Right, right.
I watched How I Met Your Mother on a screen on the side. And I don't wear glasses, so you can't catch me.
Got him. So this is a great point to, I guess, transition the podcast into just being a recap podcast for you so that you can yes. Remember
yeah,
what we're talking about.
Yeah, do tell me what happened. No, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek. I remember much... I would say that, like, a lot of the scary scenes become surreal. You know, a lot of this film is supposed to be reality-based, and it does a good job of that. But then the horror scenes are surreal, which are, like, dreamlike. And I think that that's supposed to mirror the main character. I forget her name.
Mia,
yeah. Her, like, thinking that something's happening that isn't social... give her own soul away and sacrifice herself because she thinks that's what's needed to save her daughter, her little baby daughter. But I just have a kind of issue when movies do that.
That's
where
fair.
It's like the main narrative is real life, but a lot of the horror parts are surreal and dreamlike to get a character to do something because, I don't know, it just... doesn't
sure.
do it for me, you know.
All right, well, thank you for your initial thoughts. Hopefully we will be able to spark some good conversation.
I have no doubt
But Alex Wan, how did you find Annabelle and what did you think of it initially?
I would say out of all the movie viewings that we've done in the last long while, this was probably the most fun I've had. And it's not because it was the movie itself. It's because I actually watched it with other people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, saw it with a couple friends. Set. Nice. Like, that made it much more fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I think horror movies are more fun with others as opposed to sitting here in my room by myself. So, yeah, that was a nice change. I was pretty whelmed by this movie.
Okay.
It was like... there's nothing terrible about it, but, like, really nothing good about it either. And which, in the grand scheme of things, might have disappointed me a little, because, like, I would say Annabelle itself holds, like, I would say it's a pretty big name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, any modern horror movie person has heard or knows of Annabelle. Like, I was pretty whelmed and maybe a little bit disappointed that it didn't hold up to my expectations.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was just like a really boring and bland plot. There's nothing, like really nothing about the plot itself intrigued me or interested me or kept me wanting to know what happened next. Mm-hmm. It was just like set piece, scare, next scare, resolution, you know? It was like very predictable and bland. I will say, as someone whose language is not firstly English, having a mother-daughter naming duo of Mia and Leah is fucking stupid, and if you are a writer, never ever do that again.
Okay.
You need distinct names that, when people are muttering things or words of dialogue are being said, it'll be easy to distinct who's talking about who.
Right, right.
Yeah. No rhyming names. It's like saying, like, it's like that bit in Archer where they're like trying to get him to spell something. He's like, M for Mancy.
Yeah. Are you saying Mancy or Nancy?
Yeah. Like, don't do that, writer. And writers for the future. It's not good.
Advice for
maybe this is based on a true story, so they had to use the real people's names.
Yeah, wasn't there a Conjuring 2? There was two people named Peggy, like two separate people who both had the same name.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's a movie. You can change names, okay? I'm sure real Mia and Leah will not be offended that you changed their name from something that happened, what, like 60 years ago?
It's actually the only thing in their contract that was stipulated was like, yes, you can have the rights to it, but if you even think about changing these names, deals off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Verisimilitude matters in demon movies.
Yes, of course.
So yeah, like I had a fun time watching it because I was with friends and there were like a couple pretty scary parts, but overall, it wasn't just me either. They were pretty whelmed as well, my friends. So,
Okay. Well, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills over here, but like I freaking love this movie as we watched it on Friday night. I had a fabulous time. Even though what you say is perfectly true. The plot is kind of pat and it's a little bit by the numbers and the characters are a little bit boring, I think by design. I found myself being surprised by this movie on more than one occasion. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it was because we actually watched it with the sun down and the lights out and it was like actually a scary movie, so it wasn't like the middle of an afternoon while the cats were running around and we took breaks to like feed them and stuff. But yeah, I actually found myself enjoying this movie a lot more than I would, and I wonder if it's because I was primed with the knowledge of the Rotten Tomato score, which I know doesn't mean anything, but Luke, you let us know that it's rated abysmally on Rotten Tomatoes. It is 28% certified rotten movie.
Is 28% abysmal?
It's abysmal. Yeah. Yes. It's a fail in every metric.
And I guess I had an abysmal grade in high school, huh?
I think yes.
Well, that's hurtful. Okay, carry on.
I'm sorry. It's like the grading is always like 0 to 49 is F, and then after that the letters go up. So it's like,
which is fucked up, isn't it? It just doesn't make sense in a categorical, like, you know, how come F is like a whole 49% and then, you know, your A's are like 8%? I don't know. I don't know how it works.
I don't know.
Letter grading is dumb. Okay, sorry, go ahead. I'm interrupting you.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know, because like I thought that this was going to be like a truly terrible movie that I hated every minute of and made like no sense to the point of frustration. Maybe I was like, okay, movie, what do you got? And then like the fact that it didn't commit all the sins I thought a 28% movie would commit, it surprised me and I enjoyed it more. But yeah, I thought that the bait and switch of this movie worked well in several occasions. I thought there was stuff that was setting us up as a red herring, and then when it didn't, you know, when it turned out to be a red herring, I was surprised. The why behind Annabelle and this whole, like, you know, early on they're talking about I think it's like shortly after Charles Manson was arrested and like the Helter Skelter stuff was going on in the 60s, and so they're priming you to think of satanic cults, and they actually make reference to the Disciples of the Ram, which as we know in Conjuring 3, that was the cult that Denethor's daughter was in charge of or whatever when they found that. So I thought that was a neat little sort of breadcrumb for the larger Conjuring universe that they got to. I thought that some of the scares were unique. Not like unique, but they just like they managed to catch me off guard in a way that it like scared me more than that type of scare would have done in a lot of other movies. I don't really know like how to bring it up organically without doing like a recap, which I don't want to do, but
Luke, what did you miss in the movie? We'll talk about that.
No. But I just one of the things. Okay, one of the things that really surprised me and I thought was going to come back was her husband being the most boring, bland, straight middle of the road guy that anyone could be in the 1960s, down to his name being John Form, which was like just such a bland name that I was like, this fucking guy is up to something. Either he's cheating on his wife, or he's abusive, or he's like stressed and he's going to snap and do something. And no, he was perfectly lovely. He was a wonderful, thoughtful, caring man the whole time. He was a little bit like mansplaining to her, but who wasn't in the 1960s? And so, like, I just thought that the movie surprised me, because I was like, anytime the husband is like downplaying his wife's problem, or he says like, I'm really stressed from all this work, I'm almost a doctor, I'm under so much stress, I was like, oh, he's gonna turn violent at some point. Not didn't happen. And I just thought that, like, thanks for not like falling into my expectations, movie. I really thought that was great. And like, it served to keep me on edge the whole time, because I was like, John's gonna turn. He's going to turn. He's going to be bad. You'll see. And then the credits came up and I was like, I guess not.
The occult was the real horror all along.
Yeah.
Not the husband.
Not the husband. Turns out it was a satanic cult that was looking for souls and channeling demons or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. But like that sort of stuff, because I've been primed to expect it, was refreshing, I guess. And so we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, he was very boring. I'm an almost doctor. And then,
almost doctor.
Not that it's a bad thing, but it's like, he was one of those guys that brings up, like, well, research says, like, at the opening of every single one of his sentences, which is like, in the context of him talking to his wife about their future child, yeah, that makes sense. You're concerned about your baby. You want the best for them. And, you know, research says that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But if I was his friend, that would be the fucking, like, most annoying thing ever. Oh, Alex, probably should hold off on that extra 100 grams of steak, huh? Research says that red meat, blah, blah. Oh, Alex, you know, when you pump gas, you should probably not smoke next to it, huh? Research says that you could blow up.
Is that something you do often?
No, but I'm bringing up examples of things that
Alex
happened in the
1960s. Alex reads the research. He reads the research, Billy.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Right.
Boring, okay. Boring guy who brings up research. But, yeah. I didn't have him as a red herring. I thought he was just dumb and clueless the whole movie.
Okay.
My red herring was Evelyn.
Yes. The bookshop owner, the occult bookshop owner.
Yeah.
I thought she was also set up to be, set up to be like, take this book on witchcraft.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a locket that my daughter, whose soul got stolen when she was little and she died and I never got to say goodbye to her. I know everything about the demons. And you're like, okay, you're bad. What are you doing? But yeah. Then she, even to she the point not. Where she like came in and like took... Like, she showed up at the end of the movie and, like, I know what to do, and grabbed Annabelle. And I was just like, oh, no, is she going to, like, grab this baby and be like, haha, off I go to demon times? But she sacrificed herself, so that was good for her. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, I mean, like, John was not in any way. I'd never suspected him of anything just because he was so boring. Like, you know, you had your boring characters that you're like, he was just so boring that it was like, no, there's no fucking way... And I was right. But no, Evelyn was the one that had my suspicions from start to finish, like till the, like pretty much the very end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was my thoughts on John, fucking research reader.
He's a research reader, and yet he still, you know, didn't. And this is part of the reason why I was like suspicious of him, because, you know, there's a scene early on where I think it's right after they show the clip of like the Manson family and they talk about that. And then she confronts him about leaving the front door unlocked. And she's like, why don't you lock the door? And he's like, oh, we don't have to lock the door. There's nothing, you know, it's like the total like, oh, this in this neighborhood, you don't have to lock doors because nothing's going to happen to us. We're like a safe neighborhood where people look out for us. And then they have the people next door get like satanic panicked, basically. And it's like, oh, the scares are really there. But I thought that was part of his character to, even though he was such a like nerdy doctor research man, he was still just like, nah, I don't want to believe you. I don't care if you're scared. I'm not locking my door at night, until his wife like got mad at him about it.
Right, and he's like a very devout Catholic. So what the hell is it, John? Is it the research or is it the Catholicism? Pick one.
Well, a person might point out that part of the beauty of Catholicism is that you don't have to be rational in your choices.
Oh. Beauty indeed. So, yeah, what did you think about this Disciple of the Ram, this cult that just happened to have a member named Annabelle who just happened to, you know, have parents that lived next to the forms who happened to have a doll that could be possessed by Annabelle? Like, was that a little bit too easy for both of you? Like, I think that's maybe what you're talking about, Luke, and when it's like, this movie is boring, it's like, oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, I mean, the broader context of this movie is that we're approaching 130 horror movies. And the way my brain works is that I can't help but, like, meta-analyze these movies at this point because our sample size is so large. And, yeah, I mean, neighbors get killed all the time in horror movies. Like, The Strangers was such a good film because of that horror element to it. So, yeah, bad luck, you live beside these people. They gotta get away. The cult, that's fine. I guess in what you're talking about with John and Evelyn, I didn't suspect a plot twist in this movie. And I think the reason, and it was passive. It was a passive feeling. I wasn't like, this movie's going to end the way I think it's going to end. It was subconscious, but there was nothing in the first act of this movie that made me think, I bet you this movie's going to be a little bit like Hereditary, or a little bit like Get Out, or a little bit like The Lighthouse, where the second time you watch it, you're going to notice things that are so relevant to a twist at some point. You know, whereas the crafting of those, I would say, superior films gives you this extra layer of, like, something's off. And I just never got that sense in this movie. And it's not even because this movie wasn't good. Mm-hmm. It's because it had the same tone as every other movie I've seen that doesn't have a major plot twist. So sure. I just didn't think about it that way. I feel very much like this is a studio horror movie. Not a like a written and directed by kind of horror movie that sure, is sure. willing, or an independent, which is willing to take more risks kind of thing.
Okay.
And so the scares were good, but I also just was like, oh yeah, they're going to have to, like, figure out a way through a main plot line to get someone to die at the end of this, not a subterfuge plot line. And so I guess my lack of surprise at the end is also not disappointment, but just like, yeah, that's what I thought. And again, it wasn't even this movie. It was just this genre of movie in the meta-analysis of all the horror movies we've done. Which is boring. Like, I know that's more boring than me, like, yeah, this movie did this, so I knew this. But it's like, it was just it was much more analytical and almost like logical for me. Ah. That, like, the story points I extrapolated from this specific story and put them in a data set. So there you go, listeners. That's the stuff you pay for.
this podcast is free.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, in the whole Conjuring universe, like, this is the fourth one we've done so far. We've done all three Conjuring movies.
Yeah,
there wasn't, like, any plot twists or, like, crazy revelations that happened in any of those three movies, was there? Right? Like, one, it was the house was haunted because of the lady that used to live there.
Yeah.
The second one was...
Yeah.
What, it was in, like, the UK, and it was haunted because of...
The demon Valak was about,
yeah. And then the third one was, it was haunted because of the occult things that they were trying to summon, right? So it was, like, it was all very, like, this was the reason, and that was it.
Yeah, right? You're right, I would add one thing, though. I think that all three Conjuring movies, maybe not the third one as much, but certainly the first two, had more meat on the bone as far as the themes went than this movie did. So, there was a lot of stuff about family and even arrogance with the demon Valak. Like, I just thought that there was kind of more of that second order stuff that demons are supposed to. Like, I wasn't exactly sure what this demon in Annabelle was supposed to symbolize at a deeper level. And I think you could make that case better in the Conjuring films. But that, I think you're right. It wasn't a, there were no plot twists.
Yeah, yeah. That, and like that, my point was maybe just in the CCU, that's just the thing with all these movies.
These are Hollywood horror movies.
It's just, it's straightforward. Once you find out what it is.
It's just that.
That it's just that. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just how do they execute that said thing, which I felt was done better in the Conjuring movies than in Annabelle.
Mm, sure.
Which I guess kind of leads me to my other point. The doll Annabelle itself was kind of a red herring in some ways. Because you'd think it's like, because essentially like when they get home invaded and Annabelle, like the human, she kills herself while holding the doll. And then you see like her blood drip onto Annabelle.
Into the eye. Right into the eye.
Yeah. It's one way to get an eye infection. Like, I thought it was going to be a whole Child's Play kind of thing where, you know, her soul or whatever becomes into this doll and she does all the hauntings. But no, it wasn't really that. It was just the doll became a conduit for the demon that the occult was trying to summon. Mm-hmm. Right? That was it.
Yeah. Basically.
It's like the Conjuring Universe's version of Rick's portal gun.
Yeah, sure.
When the demon needed to come in, he just portal gunned through it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought, like, Annabelle would have been a lot more Child's Play-y.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, it was a lot more dead silence-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it was kind of like if Toby from the Paranormal Activity videos had to, like, did all his, like, creeping around stuff, but also then moved a doll every time and somebody just assumed that it was the doll doing it. I was thinking about the whole Annabelle doll thing and the fact that she's this painted, maybe a wooden face or porcelain face, and she's got like these big wide staring eyes that are bright and vivid, and she's got this red hair, and then she's of course got like her white dress and her red sash, which is, it looks all very nice and clean, but of course as soon as that gets even a little bit dirty, it's like, oh, now this thing's evil and gross and scuffed and haunted as fuck. And I wonder if like the reason that dolls are scary is because we've seen so many horror movies that tell us dolls are scary. Because at some point in time, there had to be a cultural shift where people were like not terrified by dolls, but just the fact that we've only ever seen them in our horror movie watching as being scary things, like, makes us primed to associate scary with like the doll, when before it would have been like a neutral valence. I'm doing a lot of behavioral conditioning classes in right now, so
well,
this is
top of mind for me. I think that there's like some solid evolutionary theorizing around like how people's behavior changes if they think that there's somebody has eyes on them. So even secondarily, if the set of eyes doesn't belong to a living creature, just the fact that something has eyes, I think, would affect. I mean, this could be apocryphal, but I think there are even studies of like they've done murals in higher crime neighborhoods where they'll just draw a giant pair of eyes on like a wall, and crime will go down in those neighborhoods just because people feel like they're being watched more.
Are you sure that's not subtle advertising by people like not wanting to do crime because they got to get home and read Great Gatsby? They're just like, oh, big eyes.
Yeah, maybe that too. That could maybe be that. There could be an untapped overlap of those two communities.
Sure.
So are you saying that Tupac was the most law-abiding citizen because all eyes on me?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
That's the first thing that comes to mind, law-abiding citizen. Tupac Shakur. No, I think that dolls are a good facsimile of that more primary human anxiety around having what you're doing be watched by someone, even if it's innocuous or bland. Once we feel like we say that feel we have that sixth sense of like somebody's eyes on us, our behavior changes.
Right.
And there's something unnerving or uncanny about a lifeless thing with eyes. I would just guess. That's a pure like speculation. But I think it could be, there's something to that with why we find dolls creepy if they're in the middle of the night, we look up and they're looking at us.
Right.
And I mean, in these kind of movies, they stylize the eyes. They make them shiny. They make them the center of the frame or something. Right. So we're manipulated as an audience even more with that.
Yeah, which is really funny because, like, in this movie, when the priest, what was his name? Father...
Not Karras, that's the exorcist guy.
Don't ask me. I don't remember anything about this movie.
Father Perez? Father Perez?
Perez? Yeah, yeah. Father Perez, when he takes the doll from them, and he's like, I'm going to bring it to the church. And he puts it, like, riding shotgun. It reminded me of Dead Silence. And I'm like, motherfucker, like, why? And then he puts it in the backseat. I'm like, there you go. That's what you're supposed to do.
Except, no, you're not. Put it in the trunk. Put it in the trunk away from you. Like, the backseat, then you can't see it, but it still can see you.
Okay, yeah. I'm glad you brought up that scene, Alex, because that scene is probably the prime example of what my overall thought on this film is. Is like, who amongst us, or anyone watching this movie that the point of this movie happens, thought, oh, Annabelle's going to go riding with this Father Perez, and nothing will happen. No way. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew 110 times out of 100 that he's going to get fucked up in this scene, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just and that predictability you were talking about, Alex, is like, I think a better movie would have had all of the signs of Annabelle, like all those shots, and then nothing happened there. It's just like, no, this is how you make a horror movie. So we have to have him be attacked, both for the plot and for the audience experience.
And, well, of course, and because if he hadn't been attacked, then he would have called Ed and Lorraine, and they would have been on their way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stop it. Yeah.
So, yeah, when you watch a movie and you can tell exactly what's going to happen in 5 minutes, it loses some of that allure.
Sure. Okay.
That's all.
That makes sense. One final thing I wanted to say about the Annabelle doll. I'm sure I'll think of other stuff, but I found it another way they made her extra creepy was that she was so much bigger than all the other dolls that Mia had, right? Like, they had Mia, obviously, in part of her character description, they told Annabelle Wallace, like, okay, so she loves dolls, and we're going to set dress this thing with a bunch of dolls, and they're all these, like, pretty, I guess, small-sized dolls, but then when they bring in Annabelle, she's in this box that's, like, over a meter long. Like, it's this huge box, and she just, like, when they first put her up on the shelf, and she's just so much bigger, she's like 50% again bigger from the next biggest doll in there, that just, like, you know, you're manipulated to be like, oh, she is commanding the room, and her presence is so much bigger than everybody else in here, who are, you know, maybe a little bit creepy on their own, because dolls, I think, are, again, I think they're creepy, but the fact that she is so much larger is just like, oh, okay, something's going to happen with her. So, yeah. Good job, movie, I guess, on making us key into that. The fact that it's something that you can, you know, show her presence without telling us that she's evil, even though they eventually tell us a lot that she's evil. But
this movie definitely counts for this month's theme.
It definitely does count as having it all.
So,
box checked.
She was part of a set, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, so in theory, like, because the doll itself wasn't actually evil on arrival.
No, I don't think she was.
EOA, as they do. It was
she needed to be corrupted by,
yeah, the by secular the cult world. And getting used as a conduit. So in theory, any other one of those dolls could have been the conduit and become Annabelle if the human Annabelle picked it up and said, I like this doll instead. Right?
Yeah.
So let's say she picked up, like, a broom. Do you think the broom would have been a conduit?
Could be. Have you seen Fantasia? Those brooms get up to all sorts of nonsense. But no, you're right.
So I guess, like, that might have been, like, the whelming part of this movie is, like, I would have liked the actual physical doll to be, like, maybe evil from the start, or, like, a cooler reason to why this doll is haunted, rather than just, like, like
a murderous cult member.
It just makes the specific Annabelle doll feel less important in my mind, because it literally could have been any other thing in that room that became the conduit, right? It's not, there's nothing special about this specific doll other than it was rare and expensive and it was the one that the cult member picked up, right? I think that's what made me feel like, you know, like, it could have been anything else.
Well, that's, yeah, and I think maybe that's why we never got the name. We never got a name for the doll before Annabelle the murderer put her hands on her. Like, they just said, oh, you found her. Oh, you got one. Oh, this is such a rare find, that there is supposed to be some sort of history behind it. And I don't know if the other two movies in the Annabelle, you know, series.
I hope they do. I hope they answer.
It is. I think the second one is, it's called Annabelle Creation.
So, oh, there we go.
So I assume it's about like the beginning. So maybe Annabelle is more evil than we know.
Maybe. Well, and that's why she's like, she's evil. And she's like, hey, I'm Annabelle. And this cult member who is like taking a break from like neighbor murder just like walks over to the next door house and is like, wait, you're Annabelle? I'm Annabelle. That's so cool. And then like dies.
Wait, your mom's name is Martha? My mom's name is Martha.
Yeah. I thought I was the only Milhouse. Like, so I don't know. Maybe there's that reason behind, but it does seem a little bit silly to have her like pick that doll and then be like, I like your dolls, while she's in the middle of her cult duties, which I guess that's the point of like the moral panic around these satanic cults is like, they don't make any sense. They'll just kill people for no reason and do stuff for no reason. And so like she plays this like very stereotypical, you know, capital C cult member who's just like, you can't reason with them. They're just going to like do whatever. And like, that was a great way to scare people in the 60s of like the counterculture.
Okay, well, knowing that the next Annabelle is a prequel to this Annabelle, like that makes me feel like there's probably more to the physical doll itself than what was explained in this movie. So I guess I'm hopeful that, you know, that my disappointment in just if it just being a random object is not fully fleshed out. So, yeah.
Sure.
This whole conversation reminds me of a joke from existential philosophy that I remember taking in university. And so this guy comes home from work and he goes into his bedroom and his wife's lying naked in the bed with a little bit of a sheepish look on her face. And so the guy's like a little suspicious and he goes to the closet and opens the closet and his buddy Doug is also naked in the closet. He says, Doug, what are you doing here? And Doug says, well, everybody's got to be somewhere. And, you know, cult member comes in, has to bleed on some doll. Might as well be Annabelle as any other doll.
I mean,
every doll's got to be somewhere.
Maybe this, you know, joke you just set up with Doug and the woman on the bed, maybe that is what Annabelle Creation is, and it's just like a weird porno about Annabelle, the cult member. And the doll's not even in it.
Oh, I'm sure if you search Annabelle Creation on at least half the internet, you won't get the movie.
It's funny, looking for this movie, it was like, did you mean Annabelle Creation or Annabelle 3, even more Annabelle? I was like, no, the first one. What are you talking about? Okay, that was good. Good fun. Good jokes.
Good jokes.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the scares of this movie, because I think there were some genuinely scary parts, even if they could be predicted for the most part. But one thing I think that I really appreciated in this movie was how there's more than a couple times when a scare happened in a different way than I expected. And so the first one I want to talk about is when she's in that the basement of her apartment building and she's in that like storage room that's just like lit with fear, I guess, because there's no lights. It's like a creepy, dingy, drippy basement. It's very scary. And there's two times in that setup that I thought, okay, we're going to get absolute standard trope scares, where she goes into her cage and she leaves the little door open, the little chain link door open. And I was like, okay, that door's going to swing shut and it's going to be bad. And then it builds that tension around this open chain link fence door thing. Doesn't happen. Doesn't get closed. And then she gets a little bit scared by, I guess, the pram that like comes in, where like there's this like baby carriage that comes through and it's all creepy. And is it real or is she imagining it? But then she runs into the elevator and does the like door close, door open thing a couple times and is always in the basement. And I was like, one of these times those doors are going to open. There's going to be a demon right outside those doors, or there's going to be a creepy thing right outside those doors. And it didn't happen. And I was like, damn movie, I want this like scarier building to like dissipate and like I can move on to the next thing, and you're just keeping it building and building and building, and I had to give it props for those things. It's very effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I get that, but it was also like there was a scare in the middle of that, right? When the hand reaches out and grabs her when she's going for the baby carriage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there was like a scare in between those two tension pieces. So it's right. Like...
it wasn't resolved, I think.
Yeah, that's
the thing,
like
a little
thing,
bit
right?
of a scare, and then it wasn't like, you know, you're still in it. You're still in
well,
this,
it was,
like,
it was,
super
like, you see the hand, and then she runs away, and then, like, you just see, like, the dark, shadowy figure of this demon. You mm-hmm. don't really get a full look at it, and then you're like, oh, like, okay, I see what it looks like, and then, yeah, the door opening and closing, I'm going to see it again, and it doesn't happen. Like, I think, yeah, I think it would have been a little bit more effective if there wasn't the hand grabby, and it was just, mm-hmm. like, maybe the lights go off. I don't know. It was, yeah. It was like, yeah, this, there, like, yeah, it was a scary set piece, but I think they teased me a little too much, and then... yeah,
fair. Okay.
This might be the first time I've ever said this on this podcast, but I actually think the demon was the best part of this movie.
Oh yeah, that is a record.
It looked really cool and scary. I don't know if we got a name for it or not, but it definitely was creepy as fuck. It's like probably what Lipstick Face Demon should have looked like.
It looked kind of like a gargoyle. Like yeah.
Now that whole sequence, I think, makes sense because what this demon was actually just trying to do was unsettle Mia enough so that Mia would voluntarily end her own life or give her soul away. Like, that was actually the goal. So, like, I think the demon wanted to confuse her to the point of making this terrible decision that she thinks she has to make to save her daughter. Mm-hmm. And thus, scaring her but not destroying her is part of the plan. So it would make sense that the demon is there and maybe grabs her, but then doesn't attack her or something like that, because the purpose is to actually make her mentally unravel. And a broken elevator and flickering lights and seeing this demon at a distance might do more for that than just being attacked mm-hmm. by it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And then we do get a resolution to that scare where she leaves the elevator and takes the stairs, and then that shot of the demon like way down on the staircase kind of just like hunched over. I was like, oh, that's scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Usually when a monster lingers in the shot, it's less scary, but this one stayed at a good level the whole time, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really played it played that fear. I think it rode that line perfectly to like not make it seem goofy. The close up on its face kind of, I was like, oh, that's what it looks like. Now I'm a little bit less afraid of it, but...
but it does make a question arise to me, and this could just be because I didn't pay enough attention to this movie. Like, is that demon the spirit of that Annabelle cult member or not? Or is, like, the Annabelle cult member's soul is in the Annabelle doll, and that allows this bigger, badder demon to come from hell through her? Like, is she summoning this demon, or is it supposed to be a part of her?
So the whole premise of the plot was the demon wanted Mia's soul, mm-hmm. which is why the demon was trying to get Mia to, you know, jump out the window at the end.
Right. Because it said your soul or
yeah.
you so Earl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
In crayon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the demon's goal. And I think the cult had summoned that demon, but it wasn't. I guess it's not fully manifested until it takes Mia's soul, but it was able to, you know, conduit through the doll. And
was it through the doll then?
Or no, was it? I think that what happened was like the cult is like, okay, we're going to summon this demon, and what it needs is, I assume, like a murder of
the
your
soul
family.
Of a new mother or something,
but,
right?
But like, in order to summon it first to be able to collect souls, I guess that's why they needed to go and kill Annabelle's like parents who live next door, and then Annabelle died, and I think that sort of opened the door long enough to have the demon then come in and be attached to Annabelle, or I guess just like hang on to Annabelle because it didn't manipulate Annabelle in any way. It just,
are we talking about Annabelle the doll or Annabelle the human?
Annabelle the doll, pardon me. So okay. I don't know if Annabelle the human's soul is in the doll because it doesn't have any agency. It just seems like her death opened this door, and then maybe Annabelle the human's soul is like, goodbye. And then the demon is like, hello, here I am.
Well, except that we see a lot of apparitions of Annabelle, the cult member, throughout the film, though.
Fuck, you're right.
So,
yeah.
Damn it.
So somebody's manifesting something. I don't know
true.
Exactly.
Including one of the scariest parts, yeah.
I wonder if because cult's gonna cult, right? Like,
cults be culting.
Annabelle, the human, has already given up her whatever.
Sure.
Spirit, soul to this demon, and now the demon using human Annabelle's soul / spirit can
transform
conduit through the doll, because the doll was a conduit. That's what the priest said, right? He said something about how demons will sometimes use objects to accomplish their goals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So like the doll was not acting on its own accord, like the doll was being used by said demon, but also said demon was also using human Annabelle, because we see human Annabelle a bunch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as an avatar or some sort of vision. But then also the demon was doing stuff completely absent of Annabelle. Like, it seemed like more of that paranormal activity thing where the demon would put Annabelle on the rocking chair and then start the rocking chair going and then walk off to the kitchen and then turn all the burners on the stove and burn down the popcorn and then, like, turn the TV on, but it wasn't like Annabelle walking around and turning stuff on. It was just this other
demon.
Well,
we don't know that, right? I think that's the cool thing about this movie is we, as the audience, never actually see the doll move on its own or do anything on its own. We only see where it was before, where it was after, and we don't actually see like the sewing machine or the oven. Like, we don't see the act of those things turning on. We just hear them. So right,
they are like, already there when we get there. Yeah.
So that's like a kind of vague enough question, or like gives enough like plausibility that, you know, maybe Annabelle is completely mobile and is doing these things. It's just we don't know.
Yeah.
And I meant Annabelle the doll.
The doll,
this is confusing. There's a doll, there's the human, and then there's the actress is also named Annabelle. It's fucking dumb.
But then
and Leah all over again, but worse.
But then also, there, you know, Annabelle doesn't move, and I was like, great, we're going to get this very scary thing, just like the clown in Hell House LLC, where we don't ever see it moving, we just see that it has moved. But then at the end, when it's like this big showdown, there's a scene where Annabelle, like, it looks like she, like, sits up and stands up and then levitates in the air, and then there's, like, a lightning bolt or something, and we see that it's the demon who's, like, holding Annabelle up, Annabelle the doll up, and being like, and so it's like, okay, so does the doll move or does the doll not move? Can the demon move it, or like, you know?
Right, yeah, like it's so kind of vague, I think, that, and it left so many questions in my mind by the time the movie rolled out. It's like, well, what did the doll fucking do? Was it like, was it acting on its own? Was it completely controlled by the demon?
Mm-hmm.
Was it, you know,
just a doorway?
Yeah, exactly. So I think like that's what kind of left me maybe disappointed in this movie, is like, that's the whole point of the whole point of this movie was about the creepy doll, but the creepy doll wasn't like really the focal point.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Which is why I'm hoping maybe like the later movies answers these questions more. But like if it was this movie by itself in a vacuum, it was just like, well, the most intriguing and important cell of the movie is the doll, but the doll in the context of this movie really didn't play that big of a role, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's like a symptom of the larger sort of conjuring universe. Conduit. But conjuring universe.
What are you conduing?
I'm recording a podcast. But like we said this in Conjuring Devil Made Me Do It, where there's like this whole legal framework, this like court case that's supposed to be the focal point, and then it is just like, well, that's over anyway, here's this cult. And so it kind of felt like they had like the name recognition of Annabelle and then just like attached a bunch of other scary movie to it and hoped that we wouldn't notice, but we figured it out. But I also like that in the 60s every single record, if you played it backwards, had Latin on it, like bar none. That was cool.
Isn't cool Latin just English backwards though?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Pig Latin. No, that's English half switched around. It doesn't matter.
I guess there's like more kind of things that didn't really pay off that much.
Like what?
The kids.
Mm.
Especially like the one drawing the picture, right? Like Like, were they semi-conduits of this demon as well? Or was that girl like a future fortune tell? What are they called? Fortune tellers? I don't know.
Maybe it was a young Elise.
A seer? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like, you set up these, like, these kids that are, like, you know, kind of cute and, like, doing the whole, we're not supposed to talk to strangers. Mm-hmm. And then they're drawing all the, like, the girls drawing these pictures alluding to Mia walking with Leah. Fucking dumb. And Leah getting hit by a truck, which kind of happens in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But except it was her baby carriage that got hit by the truck, which was another stupid kind of Pet Cemetery thing. Like, you're in a residential street. Why is this truck moving that quickly?
Why are you driving so fast, man?
Yeah.
Where you gotta be?
So it's, yeah. But then that was it for the kids, right? It was all like, oh, we should talk to their parents, because, like...
Well, I wonder, now I'm thinking about it, and at first I was like, okay, so she met these kids, and they were kind of, like, standoffish, but sure, stranger danger, don't talk to strangers, fine. And then... She gets these set of three or four pictures of, like, her walking the baby and the truck getting closer and closer, and then the baby carriage gets hit by the truck in these crayon drawings. And I was like, is that the demon who is just drawing pictures in the same style to freak her out? Or are those kids not existent at all? Are those kids also the demon? And it's like, the demon is like, I'm going to set you up with, like, a little... friendship thing, and then I can creep you out more with these, like, drawings that are also a premonition. But, like, why would the demon want to warn you about damage coming to your baby if that's, like, the demon wants the baby soul? Like, so it was just like, yeah, I don't really know what those kids were about. We never got their names. She starts saying her name, and her brother is like, no, we can't talk to strangers. And so it's just like, were you real? Do you exist? Do you not exist? Are you both demons? What's going on? Which is, yeah. Damn it.
You know, it's right. A Hollywood horror movie, right? You have to have weird kids doing creepy drawings. All right, Luke? It's like another formula where this is what happens in these movies, so we have to just put this scene in with no real payoff because we just have to have it.
Yeah, we gotta have a creepy drawing in crayon, yeah.
One thing maybe we don't always remember is that most people who watch these kind of movies don't have podcasts about them, so they don't really, like, reminisce
on impossible
the things afterwards. So, like, a lot of this movie on one pass is totally serviceable and scary and interesting and creepy, right? It's only when you get some nerds together to start peeling back the layers of the logic and the narrative where you're like, well, what were those kids doing? We actually don't know from the movie.
Fair.
But, you know, if it's like a mainstream film, someone goes and watches it and then they just go on with their life and it's just, they probably don't even remember the kids. I'll tell you, Kevin McAllister's parents sure didn't.
Well, if only we could find some nerds to talk about horror movies then, I guess. Yeah. I guess I'll keep looking. Okay, well... One scare that I wanted to talk about specifically was, I guess, sort of the final scare, where I don't know if either of you read it this way, but when she comes into the bedroom, and this is a trigger warning for what I mentioned at the top, but, like, injury to a child. When she comes into that room and Annabelle is in the crib and she freaks out and she starts smashing Annabelle against the crib. I thought, and Kelly also thought, that this was going to be revealed that she had done that to Leah. Instead, and the demon had tricked her, and, like, that was going to be the end of the movie. Was that where the movie was leading either of you, or am I needing to see a therapist? Okay.
Yes. I definitely saw that, because that would have been like that's the shocking, horrific thing that I was building up towards. Because like, it's one of those things where when she walks in and she sees Annabelle in the crib, you're like, that's what's going to happen. And then, because I feel like we've seen lots of different movies or whatever where it's like someone is like hallucinating and it turns out that they hurt someone that they cared about or whatever.
Oculus, we just did one.
Yeah, that's right,
of course.
It's like the exact same plot motif.
Yeah, so right. Yeah, 100%. I was primed for that, but and I was terrified that was going to be the case. And like, you know, like, as terrible as it would have been and as bad, it would have been like very shocking and probably made this like, it would have elevated this movie to, like, a different scare level for me. And I guess I was really relieved that that wasn't the case, because mm-hmm. I wasn't mentally prepared to see a, to see that pan out. But
yeah,
in a really morbid way, I was also like a little bit disappointed that that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, you set up this whole thing and you're ready to like fucking shock your audience and whatever. It wasn't it. So like, oh, thank God it wasn't it. But it was also like, mm-hmm. well, then why set it up this way?
Yeah.
I still think it fits the logic of the demon's plan, though, because if the demon kills the baby, Mia's not going to voluntarily give up her soul in the way that
exactly,
demons
yeah.
need her to.
Right. Yeah, because the whole thing, of course, behind this movie is predicated on the fact that demons want human souls. They can't take babies because demons, as we find out in this movie, demons are very understanding of the concept of consent. Like, they will not take a soul without being given permission, which is like, good for you demons, that's great. But it also like plays into the narrative that like, if a demon takes your soul, and like read that as like a standing in for like if you suicide or if you self-harm or something, then it's because not that the demon is all powerful and can do it to whoever, it's because the person who gave them permission like deserved it because they had it coming. And so like that sort of narrative of like, have as enough faith to like withstand the temptations, and if you give in to temptation then you deserve whatever you're getting, that sort of narrative is throughout this movie and like throughout the time as well, the late 60s and the satanic panic and counterculture and all that stuff. But yeah, I thought that the demon could have tricked Mia into hurting her baby, and then in order to get the baby back and in order to save her, then the demon is going to be like, well, this baby is, you know, dead now, but if you jump, I will take your soul and then we'll return, you know, the baby soul, and the baby will come back to life and it'll be fine. And so I thought that's what they were going for.
Oh, like an exchange?
Like an exchange, yeah.
Okay. Like, I thought it was like more of a, oh, you killed your baby and now you're going to give your soul up because you feel so guilty about it.
No, I thought she was going to be like, I got to give it up because then they'll give the baby back and then John can raise the baby. But I also like that demons, they love human souls. They want Mia's soul. But as soon as Evelyn like cuts in line and offers her soul, the demon just has to accept that one. It's like, oh, I okay. I was here for Mia's, but I have a soul now, so I guess I can go. Goodbye.
Yes. Yeah, so I didn't quite get that. So Evelyn offers up her soul, but then what happens now? Like, the demon got its soul. Is it like fully unleashed upon the world now, or like?
We don't circle this drain, Alex. Don't go to the drain.
Well, I guess that's what it. That's what's in like now. I guess so, because now like there's like the Annabelle stuff where like from the very beginning of the movie of the, mm-hmm. the Conjuring, right? Where it's like, yeah, we got this doll and then we saw weird stuff happen.
Well, it's supposed to be like, I don't know, I guess they're led to believe that if the demon gets one soul, just one and single soul, then it's fine and it's going to go back to hell with its little soul and be happy for the rest of eternity and doesn't need to take any more, which of course has never been in the narrative of demons. So like, why would Evelyn assume that the demon could stop at one soul, right? Like, what? Maybe they're like Pringles or Lay's. Like, you can't eat just one.
Speaking of Pringles and not being able just to eat one, so I got the
that's Lay's.
Like the hot that ones Pringles the other day.
Okay,
like the Los Calientes. Okay, and they're like really good, but they're like, they are quite spicy. So you eat one, you're like, oh, wow, it's like, it's got a kick to it, and it's pretty good. It's like a little bit of lime and like quite a bit of heat. But then because it's a Pringle, you can't just have one. Right. So like, I'm eating them, I'm eating them. And by the time I had like five, like there's just like snot dripping down my nose. But I'm like, oh, this is really spicy. My mouth is kind of on fire. But I have to keep eating because they're Pringles. So I eat the whole can, and like, yeah, long story short, my butthole's on fire. Sorry, that's... Let's go back. Okay.
Talk about circling the drain.
Yeah. I was going to make that joke.
So, demon, soul, yep, only one.
No. We don't. Don't tempt me. I will not. What Luke, will the demon do once it can go do things in the world? I don't care. Do not. I will not fall for that this time.
Alex, do you think if we can tempt him a little bit more, he'll be pressured into doing it?
Okay, Billy, I have an observation.
Go ahead.
Tell me if you think that this is in any way accurate. If I were an objective viewer of why I think maybe you liked this movie, it sounds like the reason that you enjoyed this movie because of how much you thought about what might happen in this movie while it was happening versus what happened in the movie.
Right.
It sounds like your relationship to the movie while it was happening was like almost like a detective. Like you were putting the pieces together. You were trying to like, oh, does this work? Does this work? Is this a red herring? Which I totally relate to. Like if I had that relationship to this movie, like there's been a lot of movies that we've done where I am doing that.
Okay.
So I wonder if that's part of it.
I think so. I will confess something right now before I answer that question. I thought you were setting up some sort of nothing to, you know, blank EAR word for like the first 20 seconds of what you're asking me about. So I was like, what's it going
to
be?
Oh, well, relating it to that joke I made about Archer earlier.
No.
Judy Greer's in that show, but she wasn't in this movie. So I guess there was nothing to Greer.
There we go. See?
Okay.
Now Alex is on my team. Circle that drain, Billy. Circle that drain.
I think that's a pretty good observation, Luke, because yes, I did do that throughout this whole movie. I was thinking, what's going to be next? What's going to be revealed? What's going to be happening? Maybe this paper bag will not have a dead dove in it, but I was consistently, I was trying to predict it as it went along, and I think it did enjoy me. I think I did enjoy Jesus.
I think I did enjoy me.
Good observation. I think, yeah, that's very, very apt.
And I think I've done that lots too. I know that there are movies that I am basically at this point, I mean, slightly for different reasons, but every time I go into an M. Night Shyamalan movie, I'm trying to figure it out as it goes. And that's also because he's conditioned us to do that to his movies because all of them have that kind of twist.
Right.
But there are other movies we've done where it's like, okay, what's going on? Like, I don't know why this movie just, I didn't have that, like, what's going to happen next feeling. I don't know. I can't even place it.
Yeah, it's so interesting the way, like, what my mood, like, going into a movie can, like, have as an effect on, like, my enjoyment of it. If I'm feeling like I'm under pressure to watch a movie before recording because I like ran out of time during the week when I wanted to watch it. Now I feel like I have to catch up. It can feel more like a chore when I am like, oh God, I got to watch this movie before Sunday. Even though like I don't view it as a chore because I love watching them and love talking to them about you. But like, if like my mindset is like, oh, I'm not ready for this, or I'm watching this when I have other stuff that I could be doing. Yeah, it does affect it. And I'm sure that this is why our rating section is not like, it's not written in stone. Like it's mutable and as ever changing as the tides. And so, yeah, this movie just hit me in a peak interest and like willingness to watch the movie. And like, I was in the zone for want of a better piece of vocabulary, but yeah, I still liked it and way more than 28%. I think it doesn't deserve the 28%. Yeah.
And you don't care who knows?
No, I want everyone to know.
Maybe you should start your own site, Billy Tomatoes.
Billy Tomatoes.
You can just have your own ranking. Certified I can barely, Billy.
Jesus. I can barely handle more than one Instagram account. Like, there's no way I can run a movie rating website. You kidding?
Well, if you start another one, you should call it Billy Tomatoes.
I should. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just look at my notes. Does anyone have any other thoughts you wanted to bring up before we wrap it?
The opening home invasion scene was really cool. It was like, it was a single continuous shot and just spinning around. And then in the background, you see like the white robed cultists. And I was not expecting the other, like the one with the knife that stabs her to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause we see the creepy lady, human Annabelle, but we just don't have any clue that there's a second person in the house until he shows up. And that was like, whoa. But then the whole time, like when the camera's spinning around and following, Mia around. That was well shot. So mm-hmm. good job, filmmaker.
Yeah, I thought that scene opened up really interestingly too, where it's like we're in Mia and John's bedroom, but it's looking out through the window and you can see into their neighbor's bedroom, like across the little like divide between the houses. And the light goes on and we see, you know, we don't get any dialogue, but we hear them, like we can see that the couple is up and they're looking, gesticulating towards the door, and like you can sense that something is wrong, so maybe they hear someone in their house. And then we get like a scene of this like figure holding a knife rushing at them, and then the lights go off and Mia wakes up, and I was like, oh, she had a dream about something that's gonna happen, and I didn't think it was actually happening for real for a, you know, a good another 20 seconds when there was somebody actually in their house, because they didn't lock their fucking doors. God damn it. So,
but
yeah,
like the filming of that scene was incredible, the cinematography, but I've developed so many pet peeves in horror movies, and I'm sorry, I have no one to vent to about them except that's you okay. two.
That's what we're here for.
And here's another one that just I feel it's just too easy, where, you know, this horrible thing happens, the light's on. As soon as Mia lifts her head and looks over, the light's off. Like, boom. Oh, like, it's just too fucking easy. It's just too, too convenient. Right. As opposed to a real life situation where you're, like, it's just not going to line up that good every time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I appreciate movies that are a little bit less obviously trying to ratchet up jeopardy or tension of the characters through things that are possible but not plausible. If the light's on, if there's noise, if there's attack, 98 times out of 100, or 49 times out of 50, if I must.
You must.
Someone's peripheral or eye is going to catch what happens in that, or they're going to hear it. It's not just going to be a complete mystery that now the audience knows, but the characters in the movie don't. And I'm annoyed at myself for being annoyed at those things in these movies now, because it's not a big deal, but I still, it's just, again, the data set of all of the horror movies we've done. If this had been the first movie we've done, I wouldn't have cared about that at all. But because I see it in movies so many times now, just like, ah, fucking come on, movie. Do it a different way. Do something else that you can still have the same, like, danger, but... Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, something happened. Go check. But we don't know exactly because the light went off at the exact right moment.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Which, again, you know, brings up your point that it's like 99% of the audience watching this aren't going to talk about it on a podcast later. And so this is the horror so movie cares? They watched this year. So it's like, whatever. We don't need to cater to those jerks. We could just cater to the regular fans.
You know,
but yeah.
It's the cross we bear as nerds.
The cross we bear as nerds. One final thing I'll say is, like, in addition to me wanting to predict what was happening in this movie, I was very surprised that Mia didn't lose the baby at some point in time. Like, the number of times she fell over on her front at one point trying to escape the fire, the cult member stabbed her in the belly. And I was just like, oh my God, this is horrifying. And so I guess that serves her character as, like, she's had two close calls in one pregnancy and didn't lose the baby. So now it's like she's extra vigilant or extra worried that something's going to happen to Mia. I mean, I'll take that back. She wasn't that vigilant because she was like...
You mean Leah?
Leah, whatever. Mia
no,
wasn't...
No, not whatever, Billy. These are two distinct characters with very unique and different names that the writers made on purpose so that we could be able to identify the differences between the two of them.
Right,
call the child Leah, okay. And you will respect the sanctity of that script writer.
Right, okay. So Annabelle Wallace's character, Mia's daughter's name is Leah in the movie Annabelle. So, but yeah, anyway, I'll take it back. She wasn't that diligent because she just left her baby upstairs in an apartment when she took garbage out or whatever. So it's like,
wait a minute. Wait, her last name is Wallace?
Yeah, Annabelle Wallace. Is that right?
Is that the actress's name? Oh, yeah. That makes sense why her name's Mia then. Mia
Mrs.
Wallace?
Mrs. Mia Wallace.
From Pulp Fiction.
From Pulp Fiction.
See? Fucking you needed a nerd to get that one. listeners of Hollywood movies that don't care about their stupid tropes.
Hey, be nice to our listeners. We got the best listeners in the game.
No, I guess the ones who do listen aren't the ones who gloss over these things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, anything else? We're kind of circling the drain here. Luke, circle the drain. What's the demon going to do with all these souls now that's got it? Luke, give in. Give in to your hatred. I can feel it flowing through you.
It's going to jerk off on all their faces.
Huh?
That's what you get for asking me that, Billy.
Yeah, it's really... it's my bad. My bad. I apologize.
It's okay. Everyone likes a little Limp Bizkit, right? Apparently, they're still a band.
Apparently, they are still a band, yeah. You mentioned, Luke, earlier that you liked the one reference to the Warrens. Is there anything more to that thought, or are you just like, oh, yeah, Easter egg?
Well, I liked it in the sense that it was the one thing that connected it to the reason this movie exists.
Sorry, did you say the wand thing? Like the James Wan thing?
Wan reference a movie. Well, I guess at the end, they also show it. And there's some text over.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't the opening scene the exact opening scene from The Conjuring with the two nurses talking about the doll?
Yeah. So, we've seen that. Yes, it was. We've seen that movie opening twice. I wonder if there's a movie that has that 5 minutes and then the rest of that movie. Because it seems like maybe they should.
I mean, they resolved it pretty quickly in the first 5 minutes of The Conjuring, right?
That's true.
Like the first scene of like those young people. So I guess we're supposed to think that they got it after.
Mm-hmm. Because a title card comes up after those things where it says 1 year earlier and John buys Annabelle the doll for Mia. But then at the end, we see that lady in the gift shop who's like, I'm looking for something. My daughter's a nurse. Oh, this doll is perfect. Credits.
Oh, well, that has to be one of the movies.
Yeah, I hope so.
I don't know.
Like, how did the Warrens get it? Did the Warrens ever talk about how they got the Annabelle doll?
No, the Warrens got it. The Warrens got it after they solved it. Remember, this was all in the first, like, 5 minutes of The Conjuring.
Yeah, so they get the doll from solving it from these young women at the start of this movie and The Conjuring movie, probably?
That's correct. Because that's correct. The identical opening scene in both movies.
Yeah. There's even, like, we don't see either Patrick Wilson or Vera Farmiga on screen, but we do get a line from Ed. Like, we get, like, a piece of his dialogue from, because that's the same footage. So, I don't know if he's credited as being in the movie, if he gets any money for that, but what a contract if it is.
Well, this movie could have used some of his acting.
Well, this movie made a lot of money off of its relatively small budget, right?
It did. I was going to do budget and box office. Thanks for segueing me that. But it's a $6.5 million budget, and it made $84 million to date. So, like...
84?
Yeah.
It says 257 here.
Yeah, that's, I think, the Conjuring, like, franchise altogether. I did a little bit of digging and research, but I don't know if it... Because that number seems really high, but we can fact check. You can fact check me if you want.
Nope. 257 worldwide. What was the number you had?
84 million. Maybe that was domestic?
That was domestic, yeah.
Okay. So it's... Wow, so it's even... Yeah. It's wildly...
I hope Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga got some of that money, because...
You also have to look back. This was 2014, Luke. This was 8 years ago. A lot has happened in the horror movie space in 8 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It's true. When was Hereditary? 2017?
2018. Okay. I think. Yeah.
I Get Out was 2017.
2017? Okay, that's I'll right. go fuck myself.
No, Get Out was 2017. Hereditary was 2018.
Right. Okay. I Lights
Out was 2016.
That. Fuck myself.
Devil May Be Doing was 2019.
2020.
2020 was itself a horror movie. And 2021.
No, Devil
was
Made Me Do It was 2021.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What was the 2019 one then?
The Nun? No, The Nun
Conjuring
was 2018.
Two? I don't know.
Oh, Annabelle Comes Home was
2019. Ah. Oh, certainly don't search that one on the internet with no context.
All right. I think we should do our scariest part. So, okay. Luke, scariest part of the movie.
Probably the home invasion, because you're led to believe they're next door, and John is next door, so you would think he would have raised the alarm or said something, so like they snuck past him, and then I don't know why they would have gone into her house.
To play with the dolls, Luke.
Yeah, the dolls, I guess. Were they trying to get their souls into the dolls? That's unclear. But I just think like when she got attacked by them, that was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. That was very scary. For me, it's one we didn't talk about yet, we didn't mention it at all, but there's a scene where she starts seeing the spirit of like Annabelle the human as a little kid, and she's like standing at the end of one room and there's a doorway that splits them, and then the little kid runs towards the door, and just as it closes, it bursts back open, but it's grown up Annabelle human. That was very, very scary.
Yeah, she's covered in like blood as well.
Yeah, she's all covered
and
in
like
blood,
screams.
Yeah, so that made me jump. Me thinking that Mia smashed her baby to pieces, that was also very scary, even though that was not what happened, thank goodness, but I was just like, holy shit, this would have been a wholly different movie if that had been the tone they took with it. But yeah, so I think between those two was the scariest part of the movie. And man, there's actually a lot of scary parts of this movie, because also that demon on the stairs and the creepy long fingers, like again, creepy long fingers. This movie had way more scares than I thought it was going to have. So stop it with your creepy fingers, Luke. But no, I have to play the game by the rules. Pick the scariest part of the entire movie, so I'll pick the baby scene at the end. Alex, scariest part of the movie.
Mine was the kid running through the door and then transforming into the adult. I definitely jumped and did not like it. It was on top of the sudden visual change of it. You hear the pitter-patter of the feet as well, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the door slowly closing on its own. It's just like, my senses were overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was very scared.
How did your guests like it? Were they also scared at that point?
Yeah, everybody's scared. Everybody's scared. let's not pretend that we're all toughies that, you know, don't get scared by things. That's okay. We get scared.
Yeah. I think part of what I'm learning about this podcast is that like being scared is kind of fun, and like you get scared and then you're just like, oh, I don't know. It gives me a rush. It makes me reminds me I'm alive. Anyway, should we do our ratings? Luke, are you rating this more than 28% on Rotten Tomatoes, on Billy Tomatoes? And what are you rating it out of?
I think for maximum horror, we should rate this out of 5 Malias. Sorry, Mealias.
Oh, I was like, Malias, like Mealias. Barack Obama's daughter?
No. Mealias.
Mealias, okay.
Because it's just, I love names that rhyme. It's just so easy to remember them.
Mealias. Okay, how many Mealias do you give this one?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in this movie, or a lot of like characters or demons that are worth the price of admission, I suppose, is the best way to put it. Like they make it worth watching. Mm-hmm. But I still think if you take all the details out of this film and you just study its kind of underlying structure, it's about as boilerplate a horror movie as you can get. And so it does nothing to make me think differently about any horror things we've ever talked about. So I even though I think this movie was enjoyable on balance, it's going to be, we've done so many movies now that there's only about 15 or so that immediately come to mind as I can recollect from either watching it or talking about it. And mm-hmm. this movie's going to be way down there in any recollection. Like in a month, I might forget we've done this movie. and it's not, again, because it's a terrible movie. It's because it's too similar to too many other movies.
Right.
So that all said, I'm going to give it 2 Mealias out of 5. So better than 28%, but mm-hmm. not a lot better.
Sure. Sure. As we discussed earlier, still an F.
Yeah.
Still but a better F.
A better F. A better F.
F plus.
Yeah, there's F. Are there F pluses?
No, there's not.
What the fuck, man?
Listen, standardized education is bullshit. We all know that. It doesn't matter once you're out of it.
I would like a smiley face and a star sticker, please.
Like, what's that? Maybe's report cards in Arrested Development? Math makes maybe feel like crocodile. Alex Wan Kenobi, what are you giving this movie?
Yeah, I was whelmed, as I said earlier. Not a terrible movie, not a very good movie, and I think the disappointment around the reveal that, like, it's not really about the doll itself kind of stuck out to me. So I will give it 2.5 Mealeas out of 5. Not bad, not great, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just like Luke, I'll probably forget about it, but it didn't irk me as much because I had fun watching it because I watched it with other people. I think if I watched it by myself, I might have given it a lower one.
Sure. Fair enough. Yeah, I think it's no secret that I'm definitely the most positive on this one compared to the other two of you. And I think you're absolutely right, Luke. I tried to guess what was going on. I let it take me on the ride, and I refrained from sort of that meta-analysis that has taken me out of other movies, where I was just like, okay, movie, where are you going to go? Are you going this way? And the movie's like, no, 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 we're going this way. And I was like, oh, that was more obvious, but cool. Okay, where are you going now? So it was fun. Yeah, it was just fun. I don't know. It hit me in the right spot. I was ready for it to suck way more than I thought it did. And so this one, maybe this is skewing my rating a little bit. Maybe all that stuff is unfair, but we've never, deigned to stick to scientific rigors in this podcast. So I'm giving this movie a 3.7 Mealeas out of 5. Solid middle of the pack movie. Like, yeah. Watch it with some friends. Cool. I think that's the right one. If you haven't watched this movie, watch it with some friends and you do pretty well. All right. Good ratings, everyone. Let's cheer. Something to cheer. So, Mr. Mason, sure. Happy November.
Yeah.
How's it going?
I'm going to do a Star Wars cheer. I've watched the 4 episodes thus released of the Andor, the newest Star Wars show. And 4 episodes in, so still early days, but it's just great to watch a Star Wars that is so not a clunker. This show is clanker. So it's so tight, it's so smart, it's of an era of the Star Wars canon that I care way more about than so many of these other shows other than Kenobi. I'm actually like hopeful that we might get a cameo of Ewan McGregor or Hayden Christensen in Andor, because this is obviously both when they're possibly around. But just to see the germinations of the Rebel Alliance and how much this ties in to, you know, Yavin and the climax of A New Hope is just really it's really cool. This is the kind of world building of Star Wars that I enjoy, because it's more related to the central story, which is, you know, I mean, I don't hold it against anyone if they want to go explore a bigger universe, but so much of what drew me to Star Wars in the first place was the adventure, and a huge part of the adventure was this kind of high stakes battle between the Empire and the Rebellion, which kind of gets short shrift in the overall story because it's really the hero's journey, but all of the things that led to the Rebel Alliance is now, and I loved Rogue One, so this is just a great show.
Have you seen
how many episodes are they going to be total?
There's going to be 12.
12?
Yeah.
Big... Okay.
Have you watched it yet, Alex?
No. There's too much shit to watch right now. There's so much shit to watch right now. But I'll eventually watch it. I think I'll watch it when it all comes out.
Cool. No spoilers.
Are they hour-long episodes?
Between 40 to like... Yeah, sometimes they're a bit longer. It's like that streaming sequence. It's like it doesn't have to fit into a time slot.
40 to 70?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's too much TV out. I have watched Andor. I like it as well. But yeah, between that and like I still haven't watched Sandman and Rings of Power and House of Dragon and there's She-Hulk. House of Dragon. It's just, yeah, there's a lot. Anyway, good cheer. We'll have to talk about Andor when it all comes out, I think, because that's fun. Alex, what are you cheering?
I am cheering a horror movie I watched outside of this podcast.
Whoa. Ooh, did you watch?
Oh no, wow,
Alex, Infidelity. No,
what movie that's did you crazy. Watch?
I saw Barbarian in theaters.
Okay.
That movie is fucking awesome, okay? Like, you two need to watch this movie.
We need to do an episode on it?
I think we do, because okay. it
who's
is...
Who's the main guy again in that one?
The main guy?
A Skarsgård. There's a Skarsgård.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård?
Bill Skarsgård, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who plays like, Pennywise.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the substance of this movie because I don't want to give like even a second of it away, but it is fucking incredible. It is probably the best horror movie I've seen in the last year, and I think we should do it for the podcast.
Okay.
It was so good. It's like, it's scary. It's so unique. It's interesting. The premise was like, what the fuck? It's also funny. You know, it's...
Okay.
Go watch Barbarian. Barbarian. Okay.
I agree. I've heard. I will admit. I've heard the synopsis. I've heard an episode, a podcast episode, talk about it.
No, so you know what happens.
I know what happens. I'm still really excited to see it.
Oh,
but yes. Oh. No. It's don't worry about it. Like I agree.
When did Cindy join this podcast?
Hey. But yeah, Barbarian sounds amazing, and even though I heard what happens, it made me want to see the movie even more. So even though I wouldn't be spoiled or it wouldn't be a surprise, I still want to see it on the screen. And that's actually a great segue for my cheer, because I also saw a horror movie in theaters. On Thursday.
Did you see Smile?
I saw Smile. Kelly and I went and saw Smile, and it is, oh my God, it is one of the like most creepy horror movies I've seen in a while. Very tense, shades of Babadook, shades of It Follows. Oh my gosh, it was so scary, and watching it in the theaters with like other people around, it was just it was very creepy, and we've been talking about it, Kelly and I've been talking about it since we saw it on Thursday night, and so it's been like 3 days and we still kind of are like, man, that movie is creepy. So I also think we should do that movie for the podcast as soon as it comes out. So I don't know, maybe in January we should just do like horror movies that were in theaters month or something, because yeah, those are some good ones. New movies. Smile's great. I recommend go see it if you haven't, and I also want to see Barbarian. Like, I just, man, good horror is
I listen about Smile before I go watch it?
I don't know.
Don't have to answer that seriously. It was more so a dig at you.
Okay.
I will answer that for you, Alex. Don't.
Okay.
Do what makes you happy.
I didn't plan to, and I
do what makes you smile.
Do what makes you happy. Very creepy. Yeah. So that's our cheers. Good bunch of cheers. Yeah, I want to talk about Barbarian with both of you for sure, and Smile. And so go watch those. Okay, but that's going to be the end of the episode. Thanks, everyone, so much for listening. It's always a treat to bring you new episodes. And if you like what you hear, telling a friend about it is a great way to get the word out. So if you have it in you to bring it up, tell your friends, check us out. We do a fun podcast. And you can also leave us a rating or a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us find new listeners. We are also running a Patreon account, patreon.com/nothingtofear. If you would like to support that, our endeavors in podcasting, you can do that for as little as $1 a month. We have content that comes out on there. And as well as occasionally the patrons get to choose movies for us or ask us questions or do all sorts of fun stuff. So it's the start of the month as this episode comes out. Perfect time to join the Patreon. Patreon.com/nothingtofear. If you'd like to connect with us on social media, you can do that at NTFpod on Twitter, at Nothing to Fear Podcast on Instagram, and I am on Instagram at DesignBilly. And when I'm not podcasting, I'm listening to podcasts, and some of those podcasts are ones Luke does, which are
Really True Fiction and The Liberal Soul, available on all fine podcasting apps of your choice, as well as Full Spectrum Cinema, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Tuesdays on Kootenai Co-op Radio.
Kootenai Co-op Radio.
You should get that as an RSS feed and then make it a podcast too. You should do that. It'd be super easy. You can do it on Anchor. Tell other Alex.
Yeah. Come on, other Alex.
Come on, other Alex. You're not listening. Is he listening? Does he listen to our show?
Probably. I doubt it.
There's too much to listen. Just like how there's too much to watch, there's too much to listen to.
It's true. There's too much to listen to.
He's watching 7-hour Hungarian films.
Okay. All right. I get it.
Although, I have to say, our plan is for our Halloween episode, we're going to do our top 5 horror movies of this century. So
ooh.
I feel like there will be more than one reference. Actually, that might be a fun one to plug in as a bonus episode here, because it's all going to be about horror movies.
Please send me the audio.
When does this century start?
2000.
2000? Yeah. We're almost a quarter of the way done, y'all. Quarter of the way done. But if you think
God, there's... I hope before I die. I hope I die before the next century.
Yeah, same. If you actually think there's not quite enough to listen to, you can follow Alex Wan at...
One song a day on Instagram, and there's a link to a playlist. I will post a song there every day, and you can listen to it if you choose to.
Sounds great. All right, well, next week is another doll movie. Alex, you're picking. What do we listen to next week?
Oh, another doll movie. So many to choose from. Yeah.
Hang on. You can play with that definition as loosely as you want. If there's like a doll that's like a peripheral character, that's fine. Poltergeist could count.
You could choose Saw 3.
You could choose Saw 3.
Okay, I do not want to choose a Saw movie. Right. I do not want to choose a Child's Play movie.
Okay.
And I'm curious. So we're going to watch Annabelle Creation next week.
Oh my God.
Annabelle.
This is the one that's more highly rated, right?
Annabelle. All right. I think so.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
Yeah, so we're going to watch Annabelle Creation.
Annabelle month.
That's okay. I get to pick the third one, and I don't know if I finish the trilogy or do I break with tradition. Who knows? Anyway, tune in next week for Annabelle Creation. And remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear.